Welcome back in hour number two of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Got a lot of Titans discussion to get to in this hour, and then Predators head coach John Hines joining us at 7:30. Pat Forty from Sports Illustrated will join us to begin the 8 o'clock hour, and we'll look back in the 8 o'clock hour to this day 1 year ago when the world of sports and really our country as we knew it shut down. And just a crazy memorable day that we'll relive and kind of revisit this time a year ago. So looking forward to doing that in the 8 o'clock hour. Tom Hart from the SEC Network drops by at 9 o'clock. And then Hal Gill, Nashville Predators radio analyst, joins us at 9:30. We'll look ahead to the Predators tonight against the Carolina Hurricanes. So lots still to come here on the show today. And taking your thoughts all show long on our phone and text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. So, Joe, we've been talking a lot so far about the Tennessee Titans, and most of it's been on the defensive side of the ball with the cuts that have been made, but still some big questions to answer offensively as well. Are they going to be able to sign Corey Davis or Jonnu Smith, or could both of those guys end up hitting the free agent market and being in different destinations to begin next season? Let's just operate under the assumption for this conversation that Corey Davis is gone. If you're a Titans fan, knowing that you're going to have to draft wide receivers as well, what are some free agent names that stand out? Who do Titans fans want if they can't get Corey Davis into the fold? We've talked a lot here about Marvin Jones here on the show. John Brown released yesterday from the Buffalo Bills as well, a speedster who had some injury problems this past year and is now on the wrong side of 30. But John Brown, a guy that's very fast, and we know the Titans could always use more speed at wide receiver. If you're the Titans and you're evaluating some of the options that we know are out there right now, which way are you leaning?
Well, I've been a big Marvin Jones Jr. fan all along, and I think he would fit. So, you know, I'm still there. John Brown is interesting. You know, John Brown is definitely interesting. We've talked about T.Y. Hilton. You know, I'll tell you what, a guy I really like who is, I think, just a fascinating player is Curtis Samuel.
Yeah.
Coming out of Carolina. Loved him in college, too. Sort of one of those. I mean, he actually played, I think most of his college career, he played running back. He is dynamic, you know, with the ball in his hands. A guy you can do a lot of different things with. You know, what do you think about Juju Smith-Schuster?
Yeah.
What do you think about Will Fuller? Galladay's out there. I mean, basically, you've got, you know, Godwin and Robinson are the were kind of the top two, and both have been tagged. Or, like, Robinson was, I don't know if Godwin was even, maybe he was right there. So those guys have been tagged. And then from there, you know, there's a lot of guys who, some guys who it's not like it's a wash, and like Galladay is going to get paid, I think. But, I don't know, Juju Smith-Schuster? What's his market right
That's
now?
A great question.
I don't know. I mean, yeah. It looks like he's on the decline.
But so was Big Ben. How much of his decline was related to Big Ben not being able to throw the football 20 yards downfield?
Yeah. So, some of those other receivers did better than Juju did, though. But yeah.
But Deontay Johnson is more suited for getting the little, you know, five-yard routes, those catches. And Chase Claypool was a lot better at the beginning of the year when Big Ben wasn't wearing down.
Yeah. I mean, he's a good player. I mean, Will Fuller is, if you want to finally have the vertical element to your offense, and we've talked about that forever with the Titans.
Keep a spare hamstring on standby.
Right.
But, yeah.
I mean, you might get eight games, but they'll be good games, you know?
Coy in Clarksville on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, asked, what about Antonio Brown? Antonio Brown's playing in Tampa Bay.
Is he? Are they gonna
I mean, I would
him?
Assume.
I mean, the karma didn't catch him, so I guess so.
Give me Marvin Jones.
Brady loves him, some Antonio Brown.
Yeah, I wouldn't. I mean, take away even the criminal legal stuff. I think that's a massive distraction.
Yeah.
Good for the Bucks. You know, they handle it all. I mean, give them tons of credit. You know, Tom Brady's Jedi mind tricks got everyone focused every day. Like, they all like came to him, and he just touched everyone on the head before every day. Everyone just focused in on the
just
job.
Just anointed them.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
Let's go back to the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Kinston asked this earlier, and I wanted to get your thoughts on it. Would you guys give up a sixth or seventh for N'Keal Harry to come in and be a Tajae Sharpe-level replacement? Maybe not a starter, but certainly depth and probably better than any player you could get with those draft picks. And, of course, Harry being rumored to be in on the block and available. Some trade rumors and requests coming in for the Patriots about him.
I tell you what, I thought N'Keal Harry was going to be dynamite in this league. Loved him in college. I think he's got all the tools to be good, but I don't know what has happened there. I mean, other than Brady lost some of his sea monster powers at the end of his time there, and Cam wasn't good last year.
Needed that Florida sun to revitalize those sea powers, and Cam Newton wasn't good.
The fountain of youth. But that's a really interesting thought. Not one I would have had. But, I mean, I still feel like you don't give up on N'Keal Harry at this point. He could be really good.
Looks like they're about to. But if you're the Titans and it takes a sixth or seventh rounder, is that worth the risk?
I don't know. I mean, trading picks right now, we're talking about them trying to get more picks. They have to draft every position twice. So, you know,
it's true.
Don't be wrong. And right now, it's not like it's been a great glimpse of N'Keal Harry. Now, he was hurt almost his entire rookie year. That's something to keep in mind, too. And Cam wasn't good last year. So
let's go back to the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Sonny texts in and says, Juju would be a good fit because he wouldn't be the number one and could be more like when he was paired with Antonio Brown in Pittsburgh. Now, that I do think there is something to that, because I think when Antonio Brown was gone, Pittsburgh just assumed that Juju Smith-Schuster was going to come in and be their number one wide receiver. And I'm just not sure he's a number one wide receiver in the NFL. So maybe in the number two role here, which he would clearly be with A.J. Brown, maybe that's a better fit for Juju Smith-Schuster.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, he's not that, obviously, that top level guy. He looked awfully good early in his career, but like you said, he's benefiting from a ridiculously loaded offense at that point. So I think a lot of receivers, and that's the thing too, what do receivers think about this offense? Okay, well, the first thing they think of is, do I want to go to this run-heavy offense? But also, I think playing across from A.J. Brown has got to be pretty appealing to people.
Yeah, I would think so too. How appealing is it going to be to Corey Davis? That's a big question in this too. We'll see how that goes as well. Ryan on Twitter says, I'd take Curtis Samuel and then add in the draft. I mean, you brought up Curtis Samuel a little bit earlier.
I love Curtis Samuel.
I think he's a really good player. I mean, adding in the draft, I think, is a foregone conclusion at this point. Like, even if Corey Davis is back, you're going to have to draft a wide receiver. I think it just elevates the need even more if he's not back. So you're going to add in the draft to the receiver position. I keep circling back to Marvin Jones in this conversation, though. I'm with you, Porth. Like, he's a guy to me that could come in, and I realize he's older, so you're not going to get, 4 years of great production out of him. But I think Marvin Jones could come in and really fit this offense well. And to your point, Joe, you get de-lionized, maybe you get revitalized here in your career and put up some big numbers.
Yeah, if you get out of there alive, you can be a good player somewhere else. So, congratulations to him, whether he's here or not, just on getting away from Detroit. Good job. And when I say that, I mean the Lions, not Detroit. People better
just the franchise.
People better not mess with Detroit. The Lions, though, mess with the Lions. Awful.
You a big fan of Detroit? I've not heard great things. I've never been, though, so I couldn't tell you.
Absolutely, I'm a big fan of Detroit. Detroit's a great city. A mighty team that will not yield.
Yes.
Thank you.
Who could forget?
Thank you. Sounds just as beautiful as the day I sang it. Yeah.
Why did he find that so funny?
I don't know. Worth losing it in there. Yeah, don't mess with Detroit. Detroit versus everybody.
Yeah, buddy. Marvin Jones Jr. coming in here. Who knows what the future could look like for this Titans offense. It's going to be interesting, and we've not talked a lot about T.Y. Hilton, but maybe you look that way if you're the Titans. I don't – like, T.Y. Hilton, could he still be a number two in this league? I don't know.
Yeah, but, like, there's where – like, Marvin Jones kind of splits the difference, but to me, I would much rather go after a 24-year-old Curtis Samuel who hasn't done anything massive yet. But, last year, 77 catches, 851. He's all – You know, he's also a guy who, you know, he's a sweep guy. I mean, he's just a run after the catch guy who's dynamic. I'd rather go young and a little bit unproven than Hilton-ish.
What about Rashard Higgins from Cleveland?
Yeah.
Looked great against the Titans.
He did.
Yeah. I mean, you might have to go cheaper in this conversation. I mean, a lot of the names that we've been throwing out are probably going to be some of the more higher paid receivers. Rashard Higgins might fall under the radar and you might be able to get him pretty cheap.
Yeah. No, I mean, well, and that's the thing. I mean, do you have to sign a couple guys?
Yeah.
What's his best year? So his best year was, well, I guess technically this last year, $599. I mean, 16 a catch. That's not bad. The Titans did help that average.
Yes, they did. Very much.
But, you know, 37 catches, fine. He's never had, yeah, I mean, that's an interesting guy because, I mean, he's a three, right? A good three. Could he be a year two? Or, you know, can you sign him and then you draft someone who, you know, high who.
I was reading on The Athletic that he could be a number two, that he was not used enough in the Cleveland offense.
Which is interesting because then they lost Beckham, so. You know what I mean? Like, you would have assumed that would have just...
Thrown the ball to Peoples Jones?
Well, that's when he, I won't say took off, but that's when he got more targets.
Yeah, right.
Six catches for 95 yards and a touchdown against the Titans, by the way.
Yeah, he likes playing here. If you can promise him that defense every week, all pro.
He averages 95 yards and a touchdown every game at Nissan Stadium.
He does. That's a pretty good average. I think you'll take that.
You got
if you're the Titans. When we come back,
he's
we'll
26.
Continue. Yeah, still young, baby, out there just running around. When we come back, we'll continue the discussion on the Titans. Got a lot of your text to get to. We'll do that coming up next. 615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. On our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, this is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. 102.5 The Game is kicking off every weekend with free beer.
Free beer!
And who doesn't love free beer, just like our friend Ryan Porth? Tune in all day Friday for your chance to win a $25 gift card from Bavarian Beer House located at Opry Mills Mall. We'll have that opportunity, of course, with a great trivia question for you tomorrow.
Free beer
from Ryan Porth.
Nice. Get into it.
It's a great way to begin the weekend here on 102.5 The Game. So I hope you're listening tomorrow for that. We'll have that opportunity for you. Talking Titans right now here on the program. Predators head coach John Hines will join us at 7:30. So looking forward to that conversation. We'll look ahead to the game tonight against Carolina and look back at this time a year ago when the sports world shut down. I believe the Predators were in Toronto at that time. So a crazy time. We'll revisit that a little bit with John Hines as well. Right now, taking your thoughts on the Titans on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Plain Joe texts in and says, per Rex Road, Sue Watch is back. Now it feels like a Titans offseason.
There we go. Sue Watch. I mean, it's not like, you know, a ton of people are talking about him. You know, he's older. He's on the downside, but he's a freak. He's been a freak ever since he should have won the Heisman. Everyone who didn't vote for him should feel terrible shame. And, you know, when he was with the Lions, he was really good. He got the Lions to the playoffs, okay?
Yeah.
So, I mean, right there. I mean, he was unbelievably
That's
dominant.
Your bar. Like, Matthew Stafford getting them to the playoffs multiple times. He's going to win the Super Bowl
LA. They had Sue and Stafford, and Sue was absolutely unbelievably dominant. He was also a little dirty here and there. Yeah. He would stomp on a hand or... You know, little late hits.
Groin.
Stuff. Yeah. But he's still good. I mean, he was good, I thought, for the Bucs last year. And he plays like he played last year for the Bucs. If he's here next to Jeffrey Simmons, that's more disruption than you're used to.
Let's go back to the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. JD texts in and says, bring in JPP, some veteran leadership to help wake up this defense. Jason Pierre-Paul.
Let's all the Bucks,
yeah, man.
All the Bucks. What's up? I don't even know what his situation is. He out there?
I don't know. It's hard to keep up with the Bucks.
I mean,
I would think no, just based on how much cap space that they've already have. Like, they've got some work to do to get Shaq Barrett back. So, my guess is he's probably still on the roster, but I have to look. Maybe not.
I haven't heard anything about him.
If they've got to bring him,
he signed a 2-year. I mean, they'd have to cut him. Yeah. They could cut him, but I mean,
I was about to say if they've got to bring him and Shaq Barrett back and somehow fit this under the cap.
Ooh. So his cap hit is 12.5.
It's a lot.
21, man. Whew, that's a big cap hit. That's been a really good sign. I remember when they signed him, I was like, he kind of a little bit over the hill now.
But yeah.
There you go. There's an example of a guy. And that's the thing. Sometimes it works out like Jason Pierre-Paul, and sometimes it works out like Cam Wake. You know, he gets hurt and he's basically done early in the first season you sign him. It's a risk, but when it pays off, you have a team like last year with some old and young guys who are just an amazing pass rush in the playoffs.
CD on the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, says, how is it that we're having to cut numerous key players from our roster, but Kansas City can keep 47 superstars on theirs? It is interesting how they've been able to make this work in Kansas City.
Well, yeah, that's not lasting forever.
No.
They're gonna look different. I understand. They've done some amazing stuff with the cap. The cap is overrated, very much a Kansas City Chiefs Exhibit A, but it's not. That's not going to last forever. I'll tell you that.
No, certainly not going to last forever. And with the Ravens too, like they've let Judon and Yannick Ngakoue both get to free agency. We thought that would probably be the case, and they wouldn't tag either one of them. I mean, you're having to make some tough decisions if you're these teams that have been spending near the cap over the last couple of years, and now you're just having to cut bait with some people. So I'm interested to see, especially like a guy like Ngakoue, where does he end up? What is his market value? Because, I mean, I think we all know a really good player, also a guy that's been on three teams in the last like year and a half. So, and I think maybe it was TD that we had on with us that wonders like, okay, why has he been on three different teams? Like, why are people so willing and able to get rid of him? Now, I think the Jacksonville situation was its own thing, but if you're Minnesota, like, you're just immediately said, you know what? All right, we'll trade him to Baltimore.
Yeah.
I would want to know and dig a little deeper into why that's been the case.
I mean,
with Ngakoue.
I mean, maybe it's because they were started so poorly.
Could be.
That they were like, you know what? Let's just cut bait on the season.
But so they did find their way back into it.
They did. They did. When he left. So, yeah, I don't know. It's a fair question. The Chiefs, by the way, are about 19 over. One of their casualties might be Eric Fisher. So look out for that. They're going to have to cut some people, no doubt. I mean, about 19 over. You can't restructure all that away. I don't think.
Let's go back to the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Coy in Clarksville texts in and says, Damir Bird from the Patriots, he's a speedster and should come cheap. He's faster than Tyreek Hill. He had 604 yards in the ugly Patriots offense. You think of Damir Bird coming in.
I feel like whenever you sign someone who was on the Patriots, they immediately become about half as good as they were.
Yes. 604.
Although Butler was a good signing.
604 yards last year. One touchdown on the season for Bird in 16 games. So it was a breakout season for him. It was the first time in his career that he's played in 16 games, so that doesn't help either. But who knows? Maybe a cheaper option like that is something you'd have to consider if you're the Titans.
Multiple, possibly. Yeah.
Well, one that I brought up last segment was Rashard Higgins. I mentioned in The Athletic. It was actually your boy Ted Gwynn.
Okay.
Ooh. Who listed some potential steals in free agency and scheme fits. And he has Rashard Higgins as a potential steal, and that the scheme fit is the potential to be a number two receiver in a play-action heavy offense.
Well, he'd like it here.
And I
missed that piece. Let's see if I can catch up on it.
He also lists that in 2020, Higgins flashed the ability to be a very good number two receiver because of how unproven he is. He may come cheap.
Maybe so.
That's not You're a looking bad for thought. Cheap. Yeah, I mean, you have to. You have to, because you got to have, in that room in particular, depth is a real problem. I mean, Khalif Raymond, whatever you thought of him, he's gone. And so it's A.J. Brown and Cam Batson. And I guess Nick Westbrook-Ikhine, I mean, he made some good catches.
He
was decent. He came on. He battled back through,
But really not a guy you want being a regular part of your rotation in the wide receiver room.
No, exactly. I mean, you got to have depth at that position. So his – oh, and of course, Romeo Okwara is also Gwynn's – that's his – one of his. But, you know, that's another guy. It's not quite to Carl Lawson levels. It's like, man, if everybody's talking about him, is he still the underrated, you know, low-paid guy? I don't know. But Rashard Higgins, that's interesting.
Let's go back to the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Going back to Kenny Vaccaro, Ben texted in. It says, Vaccaro saves us $3 million, but is he replaceable for much cheaper? Even if the backup is confident or competent, it doesn't seem worth it. He could have restructured for $2 million. Did the Titans even try to restructure with Kenny Vaccaro?
I don't know, but I mean, look, I think this is one of those cases where you need every last cent and you feel like you've got a starter at the three.
Right.
That's what it is. And it was actually about $4 million, by the way, in savings. Dead money is, right? I think it was $7 million and the dead money's $3 million.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, every last dollar. So, I mean, I hear you like on the idea of approach first, say, hey, we'll let you go, or you can play for a mil or two. And in most years, it's a no-brainer. Yeah, I'll go out there, and someone will sign me. This is one of those years where, I mean, how you normally think about things has to be different. But, I mean, I think some of these things just have to be cuts. I understand the salary cap is, you know, overrated and all that stuff, but there's still a math that you have to do.
When we come back, we will switch gears and talk to Predators head coach John Hines. We'll look ahead to the game tonight for the Predators against the Carolina Hurricanes and also look back at this day a year ago and the craziness of when sports, as we know it, shut down. We'll talk about that next with John Hines. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porter with you on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. You're going to be joined shortly by Predators head coach John Hines. So looking forward to that conversation with him. And speaking of the Predators, make sure you're tuning in later this morning at 8:45 for your chance to participate in Preds Pick to Click and win a prize pack brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka. The Predators taking on the Carolina Hurricanes tonight. We'll have that opportunity coming for you at 8:45. And, Joe, I jinxed Philip Forsberg the other day. Took him in the competition. He did not score.
Yeah, I know.
This is an impressive, impressive streak of ineptitude from me in this competition.
It's weird. It's actually, I'm kind of wondering if you have mystical powers like Tom Brady.
Maybe so.
It's pretty amazing.
Just not in the same way. Everything he touches turns into gold. And everything that I touch...
It's the opposite
of complete crap.
King Midas.
Yes.
Hey, look at the retweet I just tweeted real quick.
Okay.
When we talk about officiating, okay? Just check it out. My buddy Isaac, that's a great follow for anybody. He's a Michigan State guy, but he's actually hilarious. He tests out every sort of chip that's ever put on the market for people, like the weirdest chips I've ever heard of. But anyway.
You mean like potato chips?
Yeah, but okay. It's like, but, like, you would be, like, especially in other countries, like, it's, like, licorice-flavored Planters peanut. I mean, it's weird, man. Like, there's so many types of chips. Anyway, he tries all these things for people to let you know if they're good. But are you watching that
play?
Yeah,
I'm seeing this. So this goes back to your theory that college basketball officiating at times is just atrocious.
Well, not just atrocious, but, I mean, I agree with his tweet, which is this call is so remarkably bad, the only explanation is the ref is being paid. I mean – like, first of all, that guy's got to get suspended immediately for people who can't see it. Basically, it's a tie game, okay? It's a conference tournament. It's UTEP. It's 64-all UTEP. I mean, I didn't see any of this. I guess this was last night. And it's a guy who scores a layup to go up, and he calls him out of bounds. He's a foot from being out of bounds. And the ref is standing there.
On the baseline.
He's looking at it from inches away and calls him out of bounds.
But, I mean, look, we see officials in all sports standing right there, and they miss things. Like Roman Yossi the other night, I was floored. The puck is there. The official is looking right at the play, and Roman Yossi gets his face pushed into the boards and nothing.
Yeah, but that's still subjective to a point. Okay?
I mean, it is.
This is, your foot was on the line. Oh, actually, nope. It's not even close, and this is a moment of deciding the game.
Let me ask you this, and I've often thought that this is the case, especially in basketball, when the whistle is always in your mouth. Like, do you think that there have been times where the official has just blown the whistle, and they're like, well, I got to go with it now. Let's just go.
Well, I first of all, I have a story about that, a personal story. But yeah, sometimes. But this is like he's immediately looking at like, he's pointless. I used to ref intramural basketball in college, and one time I did that because someone stepped on the three line. So because it was a two and not a three, I blew the whistle, and then I was like, oh, sorry, everybody. So I understand that can happen. The inadvertent whistle is fine. This dude looking at his foot, it's insane. And listen, you think Tim Donaghy is isolated? No. Where do people who want to fix games go? It is absolutely right there.
Yeah. And
there's a lot of money.
There's a lot of
money made.
To be made.
As we know.
If you can influence the decisions and influence how the game goes.
A couple charge
blocks.
Got
to be careful of that. Yeah.
A couple calls in a close game at the end of a game absolutely can swing it easily.
Speaking of the Nashville Predators, still efforting to bring on John Hines from the Nashville Predators, Dante Fabbro, two-game suspension. So we talked about it a little bit yesterday with the hearing that he had. It became official yesterday afternoon. Dante Fabbro will miss the next two games because of his hit on Brock McGinn of the Carolina Hurricanes. So you're talking about heading into this game, if you're the Predators, no Ryan Ellis, no Roman Josi, no Dante Fabbro. I am very interested to see how many minutes Matthias Ekholm is going to play tonight. It could be 35.
Put Matthias on display.
You're going to play every shift, buddy. Have fun with that.
Yeah, so what's it look like then? What's the what are the three pairings then?
I don't know. I mean, it looks like
you got Davies in there.
Frederick Allard could be on his way up. So my guess would be maybe Ekholm, Carrier, Davies. I mean, you'll probably leave Borowiecki and Benning together. They'll just be elevated. And then you'll put Davies down with Allard, I guess. Not an ideal circumstance.
Or Harper.
Yeah. Not an ideal circumstance.
Yeah, Ben Harper.
Great Especially name. Against the Carolina Hurricanes.
I know.
They're a little bit speedy.
Now, the good thing is, some of these guys can skate. Jeremy Davies can move. Allard can move if he ends up getting in there. Carrier can move. They move very well. So maybe in this particular matchup with the speed, you can kind of get by with that a little bit. But seriously, Matthias Ekholm might play 35 minutes tonight.
So what you're saying is they're not Jared Tenorti out there.
That's what I'm saying. A little bit more fleet of foot, as they say.
Tenorti. Tough watch.
Yeah. Thankfully, we don't have to do that anymore. Wish him well in Boston. I think he got into a game, at least. I don't know how that went for him.
Did he?
Yeah, I think so. But
he's physical.
Former first-round pick, by the way, Jared Tenorti. That did not work out the way that we envisioned here on the program. What do you think? So the Predators against Carolina on Tuesday played, I think, especially given the circumstances with their lineup, about as well as you probably could have hoped for if you're a Predators fan, particularly 5-on-5. Like, I honestly, 5-on-5, I thought they were the better team on Tuesday, which I did not expect at all heading into that game against Carolina. And, you know, Carolina was red hot heading in there. Maybe you just had an off night if you're the Hurricanes, and maybe they bounce back 5-on-5 tonight. But I thought the Predators did a really good job. Pekka was very good. In that, they just got bit on the power play later in the game, and then, of course, in overtime as well. If you're the Predators, you're hoping to duplicate that tonight against Carolina. My question is, like, how long would that be sustainable with the lineup that they have? I realize you're excited about some of the young pieces that they have and the young players that have come up, and maybe that gives you some hope about the future, but this is not a good spot to be in terms of the competitiveness right now, especially going up against a team like Carolina.
No, but I think when you're a team that's been where they've been this year, which is losing, being frustrated, everybody talk about who's getting traded, blow it up, I think it may not be all that bad to have just some young guys and it's sort of like, okay, no one thinks we have a chance. Just go out there and, hey, this is your opportunity right now. Prove that you belong in this league. You know, some of that stuff can lead to some good performances.
Yeah, and I mean maybe some guys getting some elevated looks here. I mean, Eli Tolman in the last game still on the third line 5-on-5. So I mean I know a lot of Predators fans were upset about this. I think we get way this is one of the things that drives me nuts about hockey. Sometimes we get way too enamored with the numbering of the lines.
The lines, like, yeah.
I get it. You look at it in third line, you think, oh my goodness, how could you have Eli Tolfin on the third line? A lot of times, the numbering doesn't mean a whole lot.
Well, other than like the fourth line. They're playing, right?
Right. It's how much you're playing. Oh. How are you using them situationally? Are you getting offensive zone faceoffs? Are you getting D zone faceoffs? Are you playing on special teams? I mean, there's a lot that goes into it. So we get very hung up on the line sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, right now, Tolvanen is one of the top threats on the team. Yeah. That's just how it is. So he's going to get ice time, right?
Yeah.
Or whatever line he's on is going to be out there.
Yeah, and I was on Smashville Live last night with Mark Borowiecki and Matt Benning, and Tolvanen's name was brought up by Hal Gill, and Matt Benning just talked about, you know, the shot is one thing, but they've just been blown away about how physical he's been away from the puck. Like, that was, I think, a big concern of mine. Is, all right, when he's getting punished in the corner or he is having to go in and lay a hit on somebody, is that going to take a toll on him over a while? And look, maybe it still will. We're still very early into his career. But he's throwing the body out there a little bit. He's been a lot more physically engaged than I thought he would be. And I think some of that is maybe just confidence. And you're playing well and you feel like you can play on all facets of the game right now. And he's done a good job of that. But that, as much as anything with Tolvanen, has blown me away this year with how different he looks in the physicality of the game. Like, even carrying the puck, like, he's not getting knocked off the puck. He's not getting pushed off the puck. That's been very, I think, encouraging to see if you're a Predators fan.
Well, that's all anybody was talking about. And so, to his credit, he obviously worked hard to address it. Sometimes you can try and it doesn't work out, but clearly he's thrown everything into to giving himself this opportunity. So tell the listeners about the Borowiecki story, because I didn't know about it. Apparently everybody knew about it.
Yeah.
I didn't know about
it. So Mark Borowiecki joined us on Smashville Live last night, and this was very popular in his time in Ottawa. So they're on a road trip in Vancouver, and basically he's walking around. He's got some lunch with his teammates, and he goes into this baby store because his wife's expecting. So he's picking up some baby supplies that he wanted to check out. He's walking down the street. And he looks over, and he sees this guy just kind of looking around and checking the scene out. All of a sudden, pulls something out and breaks a window of a car. So the guy is kind of rummaging through, and Borowiecki yells at him from the other side of the street. The guy turns around and cusses him out and all that stuff. Yells at him again. Well, eventually, they get to a point where Borowiecki is going over there trying to stop this guy from robbing this vehicle. Now, there's nobody in the car, but you're trying to steal some stuff in there. The guy pulls the bag out of the car, hops on the bike, and starts charging at Borowiecki trying to get away. And basically, like, Borowiecki's got his baby supplies in his right hand and clotheslines the dude, takes him off, and just kind of holds him down, takes the bag back away from him. Now, he said he didn't really know what the rules of engagement were at that time and did not want to, like, you know, get in trouble with the law. So he ends up letting the guy go, but holds on to the bag, calls the cops, and come to find out when the cops get there, it's got, like, passports and important documents in the bag that the guy was going to run off with. So
that he got out of that car.
That he got out of that car.
Wow.
So local hero, Mark Borowiecki, thwarted a robbery attempt.
That's impressive. Did they ever catch
him? I don't know if they ever caught him or not, but that made the rounds in Canada while he was there. So I brought that story back up with him last night. Really impressive story.
The clothesline.
Who knew that Mark Borowiecki was Batman?
That's pretty good.
A real-life Batman here with the Nashville Predators. When we come back, we'll continue to discuss the Nashville Predators. Still efforting to have Predators head coach John Hines join us here on the show. We'll see if we can do that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road. You're on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Great song, Porth. Love that jam. A little Lonely as the Night.
I think of the movie Couples Retreat.
Me too.
Every time I hear
playing
that song.
Playing a little Guitar Hero. Spoiler alert.
Billy Squire.
Yeah, man.
You rocking that with your Trans Am 1981? Jean jacket? All
gotta
the
love,
ladies.
Gotta love a little jean jacket.
I had some sweet jean jackets.
What
I
do
know,
you
I know you're surprised.
Yes, I'm shocked that you... You know, I hear jean jackets are coming back.
Oh, is that right?
Apparently, like, all the fashion from the 80s and early 90s are coming back.
My wife has a jean jacket that she wore not that long ago. I think that's... Yeah, it all cycles through. Luckily, acid wash jeans have not come back.
Yeah,
though.
Hopefully that's.
You remember those?
Oh,
you
yeah.
Wouldn't? Would you?
Yeah. My mother had some.
Yeah. Okay, okay. So you got pictures of your parents wearing them. Yeah.
Hopefully those never cycle back into style. Here, let's go.
Acid wash bell bottoms.
Our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Predators head coach John Hines. John, what's going on, man? How are we doing?
I'm great. How about you guys?
We are doing wonderful. John, I want to get your thoughts on what today kind of means a year later. Obviously, this day a year ago is when the sports world started to shut down, and Rudy Gobert of the Utah Jazz tested positive, and then it was just a whirlwind after that. What do you remember about this time a year ago? If memory serves me correctly, you guys, I think, were in Toronto at this point. What do you remember about this day and just how crazy it was with everything happening in the world of sports?
Yeah, it was crazy. We were on a road trip, so we played the night before, I think, in Montreal, and we were in Toronto, and I remember we just got up. Everything was normal. You know, just like this morning, we went down, we had breakfast, we went over to the rink early, and I got a call from David, I don't know, maybe around 8:30, and said that, we're not sure what was going to go on with the game, and we had to come back to the hotel. The players weren't going to go over to the rink in the morning, and the league was going to have a call, and we wound up going back, and I think we met for a little bit, and then, you know, they called, they shut everything down, and we had a team meeting with the players and just said that we're going to go home. We're going to fly back to Nashville, and, you know, this is what's going on for now. And there was tons of questions by the guys. And I remember even for myself, we got back to Nashville. My family was still in New Jersey, and I stayed for a day, and then David and I met again. He said, you could go fly home and see your family for a little bit. I'm not sure when this is going to start. And then it's, you know, everything went from there. So it was kind of a crazy, eerie day, just in the sense that you didn't know what was coming.
Were you like following along too, like the Rudy Gobert stuff and everything? It seemed like it was every 15 minutes there was some new thing that, you know, made it more, I guess, urgent. What was it like during when all that stuff was happening during that night?
We were following. All the guys were following it, and you're kind of, because you think it's crazy what was going on, but then you're not. You're still. Just because you're in it, you know, so you're aware of everything on the internet and whatnot and things that are going on. But just as I think players and coaches in sports, you're never going to think it would get to the extent that it did of closing. But once the NBA shut down, then you knew it was going to come.
Predators head coach John Hines on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. It's certainly a crazy time that we've all had to navigate through since then. And John, obviously, you guys taking on the Carolina Hurricanes tonight. Three out of 4 points to begin this road trip so far. What do you like about the way that your group is playing right now, even though the circumstances with the injury list that is piling up continue just on a day-by-day basis to seemingly get worse? What do you like about the way that your team has responded to that?
Yeah, you know, I think the couple things are, one, we're playing faster. You know, success or we're not able to control games, we play slow. Like, we play fast for certain points of the game, but I'd say the last two games, it's really started with our forwards. I think just our forecheck pressure, or if we lose possession of the puck in the offensive zone, there's times where guys lag behind the puck and they anticipate offense, and right now we're working at a level that, you know, we can get above pucks, we can turn pucks over, we can spend more time in the offensive zone. We don't have to play defense as long because they're chipping pucks out and you can half ice the other team. So I think our speed, our work ethic, and our puck execution the past couple of games have been at a level it needs to be, you know, competitive and win games and get points against teams like Dallas and Carolina. And that's what we talked with our team about going into this road trip. You know, our record against the top teams in the division is not good. And this is the work ethic and things we need to do to be able to beat these teams, but we need it on a more consistent basis. So for two games, we've been able to do it, and we're expecting the same effort tonight.
So we were speculating, John, on, you know, just what the defense pairings might look like. Do you know at this point, and obviously with Fabro suspended as well, do you know how you're going to organize that?
We're actually waiting through that this morning just because we got the news on Fabro obviously yesterday. But I would anticipate something of, I think we're going to have Davies play on the right side. He's played on the right side quite a bit in his career, so I would anticipate something possibly of Ekholm with Carrier, Harper, Davies, Borowicki, Benning. I would think something like that.
Predators head coach.
We need one of the lefties to play the right side because we don't have enough.
Predators head coach John Hines on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And John, we've talked to you a lot, both here on this show and in the post-game press conferences, about Elli Tolvanen, but it seems like game by game he is doing different things out there that continue to impress, and certainly his play away from the puck. I've just been blown away by the progress that he's made there. But then you go back to Saturday against Florida and Sunday against Dallas and the shot that he unloads on the power play. What kind of a weapon is a shot like that from your vantage point, and how rare is the shot that Tolvanen possesses in your opinion?
Yeah, it's not. I mean, he has a special shot there, you know, and it's not so much his one timer. It's exactly what you said. Like it's a slap slash wrist shot that's really deadly for him. He gets it off. One way he can kind of wind up it, you know, in a slap shot type looking shot. The other one is his ability to catch and release as quick as he does. You know, when he gets some of those passes from Forsberg, like it's difficult to take a 25-30 foot pass that's got heat on it, catch it and shoot it right away. There's not many guys that can do that, and that's why he's been able to score. But it's also a special gift he's got. It's a rare talent.
So as he has come on, because obviously Tolvanen has been, you know, a subject of conversation for years around here, John. And now that he is kind of apparently coming into his own. Are you seeing any change with him in terms of, you know, off the ice, like the confidence that you hear his voice more? I mean, do you see things like that also kind of complement the play on the ice?
Yes. I mean, once a younger guy comes in and he has a little bit of, you know, the first thing is he comes in, he's trying to make the team. So, they're quiet. They're just doing their thing and trying to get to know guys. And then you're also trying to earn respect of your teammates, you know, by the way that you play, and you can prove that you can help a team win, or that you really belong and you're really ready, which he's been able to do. And then it comes with some success on the ice and in games. And you can see he feels much more comfortable. Not that he was uncomfortable with the team before, but there's a different level of comfort. And as you said, confidence about yourself and the way he goes about his business is really, really strong. And, you know, you can see that the guys believe in him, and he's been very consistent, you know. And the other thing that's been really good with him is we thought his game dipped a little bit against Florida. He scored the goals, but his 5-on-5 play wasn't great. And we met with him before the Dallas game and told him, you know, we need you to be a strong 5-on-5 player. You can't just wait for the power play. And I think his last two games, 5-on-5, were excellent. Like, he's the real coachable kid. He's hungry. He wants to get better. And, you know, that's where he's at in his career. And it's really good for him. And I think it's good for our team and the organization that you have a guy that's got he's a very talented player, but he's hungry and he's coachable.
Predators head coach John Hines has been our guest here on Robbie and Rexer. John, really appreciate you taking time to join us this morning. Good luck tonight against Carolina.
All right, thanks, guys. Always enjoy chatting with you.
Hey, enjoy thanks, chatting John. With you as well, John. And going to be interesting tonight against Carolina. By the way, I almost nailed those defense pairings there.
They're very good.
Yeah. Just want to get that – take some time to get my
way to wait until back. After the interview. I thought maybe you were just going to say, you know, you could have patted your own back right in the middle.
Well,
of
nobody wants to hear me talk about the defense pairings in the middle of the interview. They'd rather hear him, but did a pretty good job.
I think if we should do the
here,
next segment
if
on
we're
how
gonna
awesome
sit here and trash me every day for how bad I am at Preds Pick to Click. I'm taking credit sometimes.
We're not that mean to you. You're harder on yourself than we are.
Maybe. I don't know.
You don't think so?
You've gotten to the point now where you just like subtly bring it up. You're like, by the way,
here's the scoreboard.
Here's
for
the scoreboard. The listeners at 5. I'm at 4. Porsche at 1. And oh, yeah. Oh, sorry, Robbie. Yeah, sorry. You're still at 0.
And by the way, like nobody, none of us have been right in
weeks.
What? Yeah, like weeks. Yeah. It hasn't moved.
I mean, me, months. But yeah, weeks.
You ever. But yeah. Sorry.
See, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Do I not get credit for calling that Victor Arvidsson was going to score in one of the games this past weekend?
No, because it wasn't in Preds Pick to Click.
I mean, you get call your shot credit.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll do that tomorrow.
As long as I get credit.
Well, you just brought it up, so we don't need to bring it up tomorrow.
Yeah, so we're not going to talk about it. So thanks, Porth. Way to blow that before Call Your Shot Friday takes place tomorrow. When we come back, we will be joined by Pat Forty from Sports Illustrated. We will revisit this day from 1 year ago when the world of sports as we knew it shut down. We'll do that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, live from the Wholesaling Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.